Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Now, the investigation into yesterday's bombing attack still very much in its early stages. A lot easier to talk about what we don't know than what we do know. Obviously, we don't know who did it or why. Investigators have started their painstaking search for clues, which begins in a sprawling 12-block area of the Back Bay, which is still cordoned off. Here's how Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis described the scene earlier today.
We are in the process of securing and processing the most complex crime scene that we've dealt with in the history of our department.
Tom Nolan was a Boston police officer for more than 20 years. He spent a decade as a police lieutenant. Over the years, he helped organize security in the city, including securing events like the Boston Marathon. He's now an associate professor of criminal justice at Boston University. And Tom Nolan, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We just heard Ed Davis there say the most complex crime scene that we have dealt with in the history of our department. Why does Ed Davis describe the crime scene that way?
Well, it's an outdoor crime scene, for one thing, and that oftentimes can be problematic for police, as the previous reporter just described, the wind disrupting and dispersing evidence, physical evidence that remains at the scene. You've got a 12-square-block area, as the police commissioner said, that over the ensuing days that officers will attempt to collapse that crime scene and make it more manageable. So you have a number of different agencies who are attempting to painstakingly collect evidence that is maybe immersed in trash that was strewn about after people dispersed from the area after the bombing. So it's a police and the investigators need to be methodical. They need to be precise. They need to ensure that the evidence that they collect will survive a prosecution, that ultimately a person or persons will be apprehended for this crime, and the trial that follows will need to survive scrutiny by defense counsel and attack by defense counsel. So officers are up against it to try and ensure that the evidence they collect is separated out from what is not relevant to the crime scene over a particularly large area. So that's a very daunting challenge.
Sure, daunting challenge. We mentioned that you were police officer more than 20 years. We heard Ed Davis describe this as the most complex crime scene. Have you, in your career, encountered anything like this, comparable?
Nothing of this magnitude, nothing of this scale. I think this is clearly without precedent. Just such a large area, so many hundreds of thousands of people who had been in the area, tens of thousands of participants in the marathon. I think it's something that that clearly is without precedent.
Given that there were so many potential witnesses to the crime, and we've talked about this in this age of cell phones and social media, so much potential material that police investigators could look at, does that make this investigation easier or more difficult?
Well, I think in some ways it makes it more easier because of the availability through technology of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of images that that will be coming into investigators as we speak. But to be able to sort through that, I think, is going to be a challenge for investigators to go through methodically, meticulously, hundreds, thousands of images to see what is relevant to this investigation and what's superfluous.
Yeah. Do you have, I'm just wondering if you're sort of your gut as a former police officer, tells you that something is going to turn up in all of the filming of this event that might be useful.
Absolutely, something is going to turn up sooner rather than later. The people who are persons who are responsible for this will be apprehended. We certainly hope soon, and I think that the evidence will be telling, that there will be convincing, clear evidence that's obtained through technology, through video surveillance cameras, that will lead officers and investigators to the culprit or culprits.
Mm. Let's go back a little bit, because I'm interested in sort of what you can tell us about securing an event like this prior to this attack. How do you secure an event as large and as open as the Boston Marathon? I'm wondering if the word secure is even a correct word when it's open and in the middle of the city like that.
Well, I think secure is the appropriate term. I think to the extent possible, the Boston Police Department does an admirable job of securing this event. There is a deployment plan that has evolved over the years that is fine-tuned based on the needs of particular races. And that hundreds of officers throughout the city are deployed here from Cleveland Circle to the finish line. And I think that over time that the Boston Police Department has really put its best foot forward. And this is a signature event not only for the city but for its police department. So they are out there in force doing the best that they can do under the circumstances. There's never going to be 100% guarantee, obviously, that something like this can't happen or won't happen. But I think that up against some incredible odds that the police do an admirable job here.
You know, we were listening to our reporter David Boeri talking about what we know so far about the actual bomb that was used and about the possibility. And of course, this is all theoretical. It's early in the investigation. We can't stress that enough, that this might have been a lone wolf attacker, so-called lone wolf attacker. And this idea that very, very difficult to defend against a determined lone wolf attacker like that.
There's never 100% guarantee that you're going to be able to provide complete seamless security in a situation like this. A determined individual who is hellbound to do some damage like this is going to be able to pierce that security net no matter how effectively the police put it up there. I think what investigators are going to try and do now, if possible, is to assemble relevant physical evidence on the ground at the scene in an effort to perhaps even reconstruct through the remnants of what they find on the scene, possibly the bomb and where it was made and maybe even by whom.
Do you think, Tom Nolan, that there's any evidence that's going to emerge out of this investigation that might compel the police in Boston to think about how they secure these events in a different way in the future?
Well, I'm sure they're going to be looking through the wisdom of hindsight after this incident and revisit how they provide security for large-scale events like this. But I think that under certain circumstances, as we've seen yesterday, it's difficult and an extraordinary challenge to provide this seamless level of security. And, of course, they will revisit it.
Tom Nolan was a Boston police officer for 20 years, more than 20 years, actually. He's now an associate professor of criminal justice at Boston University. Thanks so much for coming in, Tom Nolan.
Thank you.
Well, three people were killed in yesterday's bombings at the Boston Marathon. Boston police have confirmed the name of the second victim, 29-year-old Crystal Campbell of Medford. Also among the dead, as we knew yesterday, 8-year-old Martin Richard, who had greeted his father, Bill Richard, at the finish line moments before the first bomb went off. The boy was with his mother Denise and sister Jane, who were also seriously injured. WBUR senior reporter Dolores Handy was in Dorchester today speaking with people who know the Richard family, and she joins us in the studio. Hi, Dolores.
Hi, Meghna.
So, Dolores, last we heard, Martin's younger sister Jane had severe injuries to her leg, lost her leg, and her mother, Denise, was stabilizing with also serious injuries. How are they doing at this point?
From what I have gleaned from the information given to me by family and friends, they are in serious condition, and people are, of course, devastated by this.
Well, tell me about, I mean, you spent the day in Dorchester today. Just tell me about the mood there amongst neighbors and people who know the family.
Well, I'd like to start with a statement from Neighborhood House Charter Schools, one of the oldest charter schools in this city. In mourning today, I went over there because Denise Richard is a school librarian there. Jane was a first grader there. Her brother also went to school there. The first person I saw was a man sitting in his car. His wife was Jane's teacher in the first grade, and she had taught Martin when he was in first grade. And he said they got a call last night, and his wife was just devastated, and they'd all been called in for grief counseling. As I walked to the building, the person walking out was Boston School Superintendent Carol Johnson. She would not comment because she'd been asked not to comment. But this is something that is touching all of Boston in mourning as a result of this. And Kevin Andrews, the headmaster there, had this day-long counseling session for the teachers who needed it. I actually talked with one of the teachers, Holly Moulton, as she was walking up there, and she said Miss Richard actually read to her students, and she had attempted to deliver flowers to the Richard home, and police have cordoned off the entire area. It's a very nice neighborhood of Dorchester, Ashmont Hill, grand old houses on the eastern slope of the hill. And police have blocked off the area because of the intense media interest. I ran into a crew from Norway. But and she was trying to take flowers. She could not. But she talked with me briefly about just about the family.
the sweetest, nicest family you could meet. Just great kids, sweet, happy, full of life, energetic, well-behaved, just the sweetest family. And Mrs. Richard is the librarian at our school, so she reads to my class, and this is going to be really hard for everybody. So.
And it really is hard for everyone. I talk with their next-door neighbor, Jane Sherman, and one reporter asked, how do you feel? She turned it on them, how would you feel if something like this happened to you? She's just a great family, all-American kids, always playing hockey or baseball, riding his bike. The father took the boys skiing, and she said she saw the father when he came home last night. She said hi. He didn't say anything. She knew something was wrong, and the friend who drove him home told her that Martin was dead, and they're just in mourning.
It's only, actually, it's impossible to imagine the devastation to this family. Can you tell us anything more about 8-year-old Martin?
8-year-old Martin, just a happy-go-lucky kid riding his bike. All the kids seemed to love him. He was an active student at the school. And that's the way people describe the whole family. He has an older brother, Henry. And this is a civic-minded family. He's the father is with the St. Mark Neighborhood Civic Association. I'd stop by the coffee shop where he stops by every day, and he was usually on his way, especially on the weekends, to check in on something with his sons, playing ball and everything. Last night, the neighborhood got together at this restaurant, Tavolo. Everybody came there because this was a neighborhood that's sort of on the rise, and he's been part of that civic group that's building up Ashmont Hill, supporting the restaurants. They all got together last night at Tavolo, and it was just very tough for them because this is not just a neighbor. It was a friend and a supporter.
Mm. And Dolores, do we know any further details about how the explosion, what actually happened to the Richard family yesterday? Because as we said earlier, Martin's father had just finished running the marathon, and he ran out to greet him, or maybe was walking nearby the finish line when the bomb went off.
It might have been walking nearby. I'm not sure that he was running the marathon. The next door neighbor said she didn't see him as a runner. He rode his bike a lot. Now there's some reports saying that he did not run. I don't know for sure. I just heard the challenge to that later on, but that it would not have been unusual for them to be there celebrating something that celebrates Boston, the ultimate Boston experience.
And greeting people at the end of a major achievement. My last question for you, Dolores, is that you have been a news person in this city for a long time and really well plugged in to the neighborhoods in and around Boston. I'm just wondering what the day like was for you being in such a tight-knit neighborhood in Dorchester and seeing what you saw and speaking to whom you did speak to.
It's like losing your own child because everybody, like I'm almost speechless now. That's when you talk to people, they're almost speechless. How do you answer something about, how do you feel about something like that? A child lost just out for, this is something that's hurting all of Boston, not just Dorchester, though.
That's what I can't stop thinking about, that this happened on a day that the entire city gets together.
The world
gets together to celebrate health and vitality and determination.
Yes, and it's so quintessential Boston, in turn, the best of Boston. People from all over the world, countries, every state in the union here. And to have something like this happen on this day that you never imagine.
Mm-hmm. WBUR senior reporter Dolores Handy speaking to us about Dorchester and the neighborhood where Martin Richard grew up in. He's the 8-year-old victim of yesterday's bombing at the Boston Marathon. Dolores, thank you so much.
Thank you, Magna.
Still to come, stay with us. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to talk about how to talk about these traumatic events with children. That's still ahead on Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston from WBUR.